Shrink Wrap Radio number 763. Psychotherapist Melanie McGee on acceptance and integration training.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Melanie McGee, LCSW, developer of acceptance and integration training. She's an award-winning author, teacher, and psychotherapist with extensive training in Ericksonian hypnosis, transactional analysis, redecision therapy, self-acceptance training, and energy psychology. Now, here's the interview. Melanie McGee, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you here. Your friend Betty Friedson, who is also my guest on episode number 741, insisted I should have you on the show. So that's how this has come about in part. But then you also let me know that you've been a Shrink Wrap Radio listener.
Yes, I have.
Really?
So yes, I enjoy it very much.
Well, that's great. Well, this is my chance to do a little market research then. Do you remember how you first learned about Shrink Wrap Radio?
You know, I think that one of my students told me about it. Yeah, a couple of years ago, I'm pretty sure. I think one of my students told me about it.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
I'm always interested to know how the word gets out. What stands out for you about the show? This will be the last thing I ask you about the show.
You know, I think that what I really – one of the things that I appreciate about the show is the wide range of guests that you have on.
Yeah.
You know, and I also particularly appreciate the confluence of, like, the recent conversation you had with Scott Miller about his work in deliberate practice. And then something as wide-ranging as Betty's great work in intuition and accessing our intuition as healers and psychotherapists. So I appreciate the wide range of conversation.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's definitely one of the things that I set out to do, actually, and have stuck with. And yet at the same time, it will fall into a pattern either by plan, but often just by synchronicity into a meaningful pattern of a little run, you know, that where they kind of relate to each other. And that's always very exciting to me when that happens, because, as I say, it's usually not due to planning.
Mm-hmm.
So, but let's talk about you, as they say. And you refer to your approach as integration and acceptance therapy, or AIT. Do you really consider it?
Acceptance and integration training.
What? Oh, did I say something? Acceptance and integration.
Training, instead of therapy.
Yeah. Okay, so that's something I wanted to ask you about. Is it therapy or is it not therapy? Why or why not?
Yeah, it's definitely therapeutic and is being used by psychotherapists in numerous states. It's also being used by spiritual directors and coaches and mentors. The choice for the word training instead of therapy was very deliberate, though I'm a psychotherapist and have been practicing since 1984.
Okay.
One of my main mentors, Dick Olney, he developed self-acceptance training. And from his point of view, self-acceptance is not a static state. It's dynamic. And we're always being informed and invited into deeper levels of acceptance. And so it's a lifelong experience rather than a one and done.
Yeah, that's a good point. So say more about how you came to develop this approach.
Well, it probably began when I was in graduate school, when I was leaving graduate school, and two of my professors at the time suggested that I really wanted to become more effective as a psychotherapist. If I wanted to master the work, I needed to find masters and study with them. So I took that to heart. And over the course of the years, I studied with incredible master therapists, Dick Olney, Bob and Mary Golding, Corey Hammond. And then in, I guess, probably close to 15 years ago now, I met Živorod Slavinsky, who is a psychologist from Belgrade. And his work in integration really brought it all together for me.
What was his first name? I didn't catch it.
Živorod, Z-I-V-O-R-A-D, Živorod.
Okay.
Yeah, Slavinsky.
Okay. But you started to say more about him. I cut you off.
Oh, that's good. Živorod, I had been studying non-dual philosophy and meditation for a couple of few decades by the time I met him. And the work that I experienced with him brought alive teachings that I had been studying and gave a mechanism for psychological transformation that also lands in spiritual well-being. So the development of the model began just with the study with all these teachers. And then a friend of mine, another student of Živorod's who is in Canada, Satyan Raja, Satyan suggested that what I was doing was more than what it was more than the sum of the parts and really encouraged me to contemplate the model so that I could share it more. And that's that was really the beginning, was recognizing that it is a model.
And what's the, you know, your good friend is Betty, who we already referred to here. And what's the role of intuition in your approach? Because that's big for her, and I assume it might be for you as well.
Yeah, the one of the things that we find is that intuition of psychotherapists, and again, we don't have the research on this, but when we are uncluttered from tangled and charged energy ourselves, and same with our clients, we have access to greater intuition. So that's part, instead of, it's like one of the consequences of this work is increased experiences of mindfulness, mindful awareness. It's not like we go at it directly, but it arises. Mm-hmm. And another consequence of the work is enhanced intuitive awareness that feels like there's very little doubt about it. It's just informed by your own inner knowing. And so when it arises, there's no doubt. It's just, this is the next right step for me.
Yeah. Well, take us more deeply into it. You know, like, what do you do?
Yeah. So the model, it has really five phases. And we first begin with seeking understanding like we would in any therapeutic approach. But we move through these five phases in every session. So in seeking understanding, we're engaging in a discovery process to discover what's most challenging for our client at the time, what they essentially want, they want to work on, what their change contract is for that session. You know, that aspect of the work was really influenced by Bob and Mary Goulding and their brilliance with contracting for change. So the first probably 10 minutes or so is in discovery and seeking understanding about where our client is. We're also asking at that point what change they noticed from the previous work, because we want to make sure that the change that we work toward actually held, that so there's nothing left that we need to address. So once we do that, then we move on to engaging our clarity and focus by collaborating on what is it exactly we're going to focus on. Now that we've kind of explored some things, we're narrowing our focus. Once we've done that, we move into resolving the problem, resolving the tension of the problem through integration. And that's really where the magic is, that we are accessing, I love what you said earlier, David, about that that when things get on a run, because your recent conversation about DBT, it's like, yeah, there's definitely some similarities with DBT.
Okay.
What we do though in the resolution of the problem part is that we are neutralizing the charge tension of thoughts, images, emotions, and body sensations.
I was going to say, this is starting to sound like there might be some kind of body work or attention on the body. Yeah, so keep going.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, because, you know, as human beings, from our perspective, we have four elements of experience: thoughts, images, emotions, and body sensations. And when those elements are charged, then we are limiting our perspective. So what we do in the resolution aspect of this, the integration part, is that we are neutralizing that charged energy. And what happens is that we and our clients experience a more spacious awareness, because we're no longer tangled in all this psycho-emotional tension. So there's empty, spacious awareness.
What do you do to neutralize the energy?
So there are a number of ways that we do that. That one of the principles of this work is that the integration of two opposing psychological states can alleviate psychological suffering. So, for instance, if we have someone who's really worried about sending their child to school right now, I mean, this is real. This is a very difficult time.
Very big in our family with grandkids. So it's a lot of discussion right now.
A lot of discussion.
Yeah.
And trying to discern what right action is very difficult. We don't have much space between the stimulus of the anxiety and the response of, oh, I've got to do something now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things that we try to do is create a little more internal space so we can have a broader perspective. So, for instance, with this worry, and we can think of worry as like a one, or, you know, I don't worry very much, but people who journey with anxiety or depression and it's alive for them, that's a cognitive pattern for them, right? So with worry, for instance, I recently worked with someone, we oscillated, we looked for two opposites to oscillate with. And with this one, we just oscillated between the thought that came up about worry and then what the emotion was, back to whatever thought there was, back to whatever new emotion there was. And moving like this, back and forth like this, eventually what happens, Dave, is that people no longer, there's like, I can't think of anything and I don't feel any emotion other than calm.
Great.
And it happens relatively quickly.
Yeah.
So that's a tiny little example, but we have, I mean, the certification process, for instance, they take 8 months to learn a lot of different ways to help people become more integrated and whole.
Yeah. Well, you know, often in these interviews, I'm working from a book that the person has written and can develop a lot of questions around that. I don't have that at this point. You haven't written that book yet.
That's right.
I don't know if you're working on it. I'll bet you are. So examples are really helpful to make it concrete for us. So please feel free to keep going and to make it as concrete. And, you know, we want to be a fly on the wall and kind of, hey, how's this like the things we already know? How is it different than the things we already? For example, when you're talking about the integration of opposites, I started to think of psychosynthesis, and I took a workshop at Esalen many years ago in psychosynthesis, and a lot of it was about bringing together the opposites and raising them up towards the light, if you will, and that there would be a coming together.
Ah, yes. So, yes. So Roberto Assaggioli's work in psychosynthesis, his work is kind of threaded throughout Ziverrod's work. You'll see the evidence of it, particularly the principle that in lower states of consciousness, there are no solutions. And in higher states of consciousness, there are no problems.
I like that as a phrase.
Yeah. Isn't that nice? And
yeah.
So we're essentially working like, for instance, okay, if we're in the resolution part, the integration part of this, and I can think of a client who was very angry at his wife about something that she did. And he was not really regulating that emotion very well. And so he was coming across pretty aggressively. And it's not the kind of relationship that he wants to have.
Yeah.
So the problem was identified. I got angry unnecessarily. The goal was identified. I want to be more patient and able to listen better. So clear problem, clear goal. What we did was with that particular situation, we oscillated in a very specific way, identifying the thoughts, images, and emotions and sensations associated with the anger in that moment, and found another moment of just a happy moment, unrelated to the situation. Mm-hmm. Any old happy moment in life doesn't matter. Oscillating between those two, what happens is that the thoughts, images, emotions, and sensations on both sides disappear, and there's only emptiness left. Then when I ask him later, so we resolve the problem doesn't feel like a problem, it feels like he can listen with more ease. But then when I go on to the next step to verify the results, so what do you think? Is it possible that this anger at your wife could impose itself on you again in the future against your will? Yeah. So on a scale of 0 to 10, about how confident are you that this is under your control? About a 6. That's not great. We want him to be higher at an 8 or a 9 that he can absolutely pull back from this anger. Okay. So now that we know he thinks it's going to be a problem for him in the future against his will, then we can work from the wife's point of view, and that will reveal more content. Ask him the question again. He says, no, it's not going to be a problem. So then he goes home and embodies what the new knowledge and understanding that he has. And the next time he comes back, we ask him again, so what happened with that anger situation? It's really not a problem. So that's how a session and the next session pretty much look.
Yeah, yeah. So in a sense, you check in at the beginning of each session to kind of assess freshly. And mm-hmm. and so do you tend to find continuity, like as a person working on a theme or a set of issues over from session to session, or is it really like just hopping around from one state of being to another?
Yeah, I think okay, so what I notice with people who have been journeying with depression or anxiety for a long time, they're more in the theme of really looking at and learning to uproot distorting thinking and routines that don't serve them, whether they're patterns of thinking or patterns of being that don't serve them. So their work is pretty focused like that. With people who are not journeying with a mood disorder, it's really interesting, David, because they tend to forget, oh, I forgot that was a problem. Yeah. Now I want to talk about that thing that happened at work. Or I want to, and I want to talk about this goal I have. And I was just reviewing some videos from my recent training with a fellowship. This is the certification program. And one of the people was talking about how she noticed that her clients in 6 months went from, you know, having all kinds of relationship problems at work and at home and feeling really stressed and overwhelmed, and the pandemic was wearing them down, and really working with sort of the stress that's coming at them. And then within 5 months, they're saying, you know, no, really what I want is I want to develop ongoing steadiness. I'm really ready to, like, their goals become higher. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they move up a hierarchy of goals very naturally.
I like the phrase that you use, journeying with depression, journeying with anxiety. Mm-hmm. I've not heard it said that way before, and yet it's very evocative, and it also seems to me to be better than, it's not quite labeling a person in the way that in the past,
having people, a mood disorder.
Yeah, having this. So instead of mm-hmm. You are suffering from this, it's you're journeying with this, which suggests that maybe you could depart from that thing that you've been journeying with or set it down.
Yeah. And it's also a reminder, you know, one of the principles of this work is the true self is not encumbered by the limitations of a narrative. The true self is a being. So big part of this work is helping people shift identification from the conditioning of their narrative and their trauma and their experiences to align with who they are as a being. And so for me, yeah, it's a journey. Some of us are journeying with trauma. Some of us are journeying with all kinds of things.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I'm wondering about, because there's clearly a spiritual dimension to this, what's your own spiritual history, if I may ask? Did you grow up in a religious family? Blah, blah, blah.
That's such a good question. Sometimes I think I must have been just born for this. My grandparents were Pentecostal holiness people.
Mine too.
My grandfather.
Yeah,
so
mine too.
So my mother's response to all of that was, honey, I'll take you to any church you want to go to, but I am not going.
Uh-huh.
So as a kid, and I was an army brat. So we moved all over the world. You know, when we lived in the Middle East, I went to mosques. When we lived in the Southeast, I went to church, you know, I went to temple. So I came up with kind of a wide open feeling and experience of there are 1,000 doorways into the garden. Just open one.
You know? Now, the Pentecostal approach tends to be very narrow from
very
my experience
narrow.
Of it. Yeah, right. Very narrow, very literal. So somehow, where did you, maybe it was the travel that opened you up, huh, to there's not just one way.
It was, you know from your own experience with that religion, how traumatic that can be. And maybe not from your experience, but it can be traumatic for some of us. And and when I was young, my grandmother, very young, my grandmother would terrify me with stories of heaven and hell and how my parents were going to rot and burn in hell if they didn't take Jesus into their lives as their Lord and Savior. And it was awful for a child. So I would get on that big black telephone. My mother would be somewhere else and my other grandmothers, and I'd, you know, call my mother, that sound. And my mother had this story that she told me throughout my childhood, and I think it saved me, and I think it's what put me on this path. She said, you know, honey, she'd say, hold your hand, that there's, you've got your pointy finger, it's going up your arm, all the way up to your arm, to your heart. Well, your grandmother, she's on this road to heaven. She'd say, tap your heart. You know, your father, you might have to hold the door open for him, tap your heart. But he's going to find his own road to heaven. Your grandmother, grandfather, he's on this road. I've got my own. You're going to find your own road to heaven, but they all get there. Tap your heart. And so I just came to appreciate that there were a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
And so I started meditating when I was 23, I think. A daily practice, and that got me interested in non-dual philosophy, which I studied and studied and studied for the last several decades. I find it fascinating. And when I met Jivarad Slavinsky, he had ways of helping people resolve psychological pain-filled problems while giving access to non-dual states of consciousness, and then teaching them how to do that. And I found that fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. So
because what the gift of my mother's wisdom came alive for me.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I was because I wasn't full time living with my grandparents, did it for various lengths of time. They definitely had an impact, but there was also separation. And of living at other places and living with my mother and dad. Mm-hmm. And so I had a sense of some separation, and that wasn't the whole world, the whole story.
I think that's probably true for me as well, David, that gave me the being an army brat moving around gave me perspective I wouldn't have otherwise had, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a big dose of that when I went to college. I went away. I wanted to get away from my home situation and was open with my mother about that I want to go to college, but I want to go away. And she was willing to engage with that and help me, you know, fill out applications and so on so that I could do that. And then when I was in college and I was Youth for Christ was there, pounding, knocking on my door and trying to get me involved with them. But I was meeting all these other people from different religious or no religious backgrounds. And I just couldn't buy the notion that they were going to hell, that there would be a God who is less compassionate than me, because I would not send them to hell.
Yeah.
So that, for me, that kind of tore it.
Yeah, it just sort of breaks down at some point.
Yeah. But again, and
there was also a gift, I think, in that experience, challenging as my grandmother could be around this and how scary it was. There were also moments that were equally like shining. If I got into trouble as a little girl, and it wasn't often because I had a very good girl script, you know, that didn't happen. But every once in a while, I get in trouble, and she would say, you know, she had one of those big vanity mirrors, you know, those old fashioned big vanity mirrors. Yeah. And so she'd say, you go look in front of that mirror, you go stand there and look at that mirror until you see God peeking back. When you see God peeking back, you come talk to me, then we'll have a conversation.
Huh.
So I would go stand and look in the mirror and, you know, just look. And it's, so of course you go into a light trance, right? A child looking in a mirror, all nice. I went into a light trance, I'm sure. And in the evening in the South, the light can turn so golden. And it was one of those evenings where the light turned golden. Everything in the room seemed alight with golden dust particles.
Yeah. Wow.
And then I looked in my eyes and I felt like I was the same. That was probably my first transcendent experience. I was the same as the dust, the same as the room, the same as my grandma, the same as the trouble I created. It was all just me. And I don't know how long I must have stood there, but when my grandmother finally saw me, I don't know what she must have seen when I looked up at her.
That's a great story.
But I think I saw God peeking back.
Yeah.
That delusion of separation.
Uh-huh. So that was your first kind of entry to that other world.
Yeah. And then I got really interested in, you know, when I experienced that other world is accessible to us and we can use the problems that we faced every single day to access that and become more stable in that. That's pretty alluring. It gives us the space between stimulus and response.
Do you find that some clients are have a great difficulty doing that? I mean, you make it sound easy, but I could imagine that there'd be clients who are resistant, who have had no taste of that sort of thing, or else who are, you know, extremely skeptical, etc. How do you deal with that variety?
Yeah, so I see primarily other therapists and physicians and professors at this point. You know, my clientele at this point in my career. So many of them come to me and they're very much in their head to begin with. And also for context, I live in the Bible Belt.
Okay. So where do you live? I forgot.
I live in Maryville, Tennessee, just south of Knoxville. Yeah, near the Great Smoky Mountains.
Yeah.
So I live in the Bible Belt, and it's not uncommon for people to come to me or to my students with, you know, very traditional expectations about what therapy is and what to expect. And part of their training is learning how to navigate staying in collaboration and connecting with clients while simultaneously challenging them to let go of the narrative. And so and using the tension of the narrative to resolve the pain. And typically it only takes one or two times of people having that experience that they're like, I don't care, whatever you want to do, let's do it. Like they no longer care about coming in and going over the same story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wonderful, because that going over the story can really be sort of a long-term trap.
Mm-hmm. And re-traumatizing for some.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There was recently a podcast, I think it was a This American Life podcast, about trauma and how they were able to resolve it in something like 8 weeks. I got so many emails and calls from students that week just laughing. Like, this is what they were describing we could take care of in one session. You know, it's so quick, and we just don't have to keep re-traumatizing people with long, arduous explorations of the trauma.
Well, I'm a fan of This American Life. I miss that one. I don't regularly hear it, but if you let me know if you can dig it up at some point, so I can search it out. You don't have to do it right now.
Yeah.
But that would be that would be interesting. So what has the how has the COVID affected your work? Is all of your work these days virtual?
Everything's virtual. I opened up a little bit for I just have a couple of individuals that I would see in the office. And all of the training went virtual. So the surprise of that is that in the past, people have had to come to Tennessee for training. And because of COVID, we just said, well, we had to switch in the middle of a training. We were in the middle of a cohort last year. So we just went virtual immediately. And then all this year, all of our training has been virtual. And the surprise has been that it's opened it up to people in California and Vermont and Chicago and Illinois and Iowa. So that's been surprising that now people have more access to the training because they don't have to travel to be here.
Is it a group training or all one-on-one?
It's all small group training.
Small group. Mm-hmm. What size groups?
Between 8 and 12.
Okay. Not so small.
Not so small, but the beauty of the training is that people have, they work with each other as practice partners. And so they really develop a sense of what it's like to work with a variety of different people. So the intimacy of the group coalesces really quickly, and people are able to not only learn what they need to learn to serve their clients, but everything they're learning in these programs, we also do with ourselves. The expectation is that you will learn to do this work with yourself because you will soon be entering territory. Your clients will be entering territory that if you're not familiar with it, you don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
Because this non-dual space is very different for most people.
I have the impression that you also work with artists, with writer's block, things like that. Is that right, or am I making that up?
I have good intuition. I have worked with many artists in the past and writers, and right now I don't currently have anyone like that, primarily because one of my students works more with those people. She's an artist, and she works more with artists, so I refer to her for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's great for artists. Oof.
Where do you see your work going in the future? What's your map look like?
What a sweet question, because, you know, I didn't see my work going here. This was a real surprise. You know, I didn't anticipate that I would develop a model of care and then commit the last part of my career helping make sure that model of care has a solid footing. You know, to make sure that there are enough people trained. So right now we have about 50 practitioners trained across the country. Where I see things going is that I'm continuing, it will be training more people to train others. Right now there's just one other trainer. And I'm working on a project to develop an app for helping people have in their hand a way to readily, easily serve their own state and return to a steady state of being.
Wow.
And I'm working on the book. I got to finish the book this year.
Yeah. I'll bet you there's probably a lot of opportunity to use your processes on yourself working
Absolutely.
On a book.
Absolutely. Every day.
Because that's
challenging,
and
a research project. I've got a couple of research projects because that's important. I mean, we have to have research to document the veracity of what we're offering. So that's also in the works.
Well, has your research project started? If so, can you describe how it's set up?
Yeah, it started. And what we're doing is we have a clinician pre and post and a client pre and post, with identifying what the problem is that they worked on, what process was used to help them accept and integrate that problem so that they resolve it. How confident are they that they're able to navigate that with more ease now? And we catch that from the client point of view and the clinician point of view, and we'll be comparing all of those.
So you'll build up a record of a number of them, and so that you could look for any trends or
exactly, yeah. Exactly. Our goal is to have the pilot study have at least 200 sessions that we have, and then move it forward to gather more sessions, because it's one thing to get emails and texts from clients and from clients of, you know, from all of that saying, this is so great, this has changed my life. But it's another thing to identify what it's actually helping and what we're noticing around cognitive distortions. And so the other research project that has not yet started that I'm wanting is to be able to measure distorting thinking, to measure how quickly people can uproot distorted thinking as they use these processes.
Wow. Well, you've got a lot on your plate.
I do have a lot on my plate.
Yeah.
But I love it. I love it. Because I can use these processes with myself. And so every day I can return home to this awareness of expansiveness and then just go about my work. Go about my day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I imagine a lot of this work really has come out of your work with yourself, and also how you work with other people, right? And that's this is becoming codified from all of that experience,
right?
The accumulation.
Yeah, the accumulate I stand like you, I'm sure we stand on the shoulders of giants, and I'm to the point in my career that I think I would lose respect for myself as a student if I didn't do everything I could to share what I've learned. You know, I feel like I owe that to my teachers.
Yeah.
And so that's what I see the rest of my career looking like, is doing what I can to share it.
Okay. Is there anything more that we haven't really touched on that you would like to get out into this interview?
I think that one thing I'd like to underscore is we really can use presenting problems and challenges that our clients bring to us. We can use those for spiritual evolution. We could use those for spiritual well-being. By deactivating that tension and neutralizing that tension, it steps people into higher states. And I think that's pretty remarkable that our profession is in a place where within a single hour, we can not only help a client resolve a problem, but help them access their own inner ease and wisdom.
Yeah, I would say so. It's kind of a radical claim. I think many people would consider that to be a very radical claim. Ideally, over time, more and more people will begin to see that as part of the proper profession.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand how it seems radical. but it's not. I mean, when you see it every day, and I talk to therapists every day who, like anybody else, feeling at the end of the day uplifted and not drained, because therapists around, I mean, we are getting slammed. But in the AIT community, the therapists are talking about how at the end of the day, they feel calmer, relaxed, like they're doing the work along with their clients, not consciously, it's happening. So that's another area of research that I'm curious about, like what's going on there? So that's, I think the other thing is I would really invite people who are interested to like follow up. And there's a foundations training coming up in September. Folks can take a look at and get a taste, you know, without too much of an investment.
Yeah. How can people get in touch with you or find out more about your work?
You can visit aait.solutions. There's a section there, learn. You can check out the foundations training or the fellowship. Join the waiting or the mailing list, because that's where I announce trainings. If you're on Facebook, there's also a Facebook community called the AAIT community. And so that's another place folks can get connected. Mm-hmm. And of course, they're welcome to email me and we can touch base from there.
Okay. Melanie McGee, I want to thank you for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you so much. It's really been such a pleasure and truly such an honor to be with you. I'm really grateful. Thank you.
I thoroughly appreciated today's interview with Melanie McGee, who I found very warm and inspiring. I'm struck by the apparent paradox that she is, on the one hand, a trained psychotherapist, and on the other, says that her acceptance and integration work is not a therapy, but a training. Despite the seeming contradiction in that, I think I understand it. I see it as congruent with her thrust to destigmatize and demedicalize the helping behaviors that came to be called psychotherapy. I was particularly sensitized to that when I was struck by her journeying phraseology. I noted that she used phrases such as, quotes, journeying with sadness, close quotes, quotes, journeying with anxiety, close quotes, journeying with addiction, close quotes, and so on. This sort of wording is in contrast to diagnostic terms such as anxiety disorder, mood disorder, and such. To me, the journey metaphor implies a transient situation rather than implying there is some failing in the client's very core essence. It raises the possibility that somehow an unwelcome companion has been picked up on the journey, and there is the possibility of coming to outgrow or part from that unwelcome stranger. I like it. It definitely fits with a trend that has been in the people helping professions for some time of viewing the process not so much as a therapy as an educational process. This goes back at least as far as Carl Rogers' preference for the word client rather than patient, and a skilled helper model grew out of Rogers' work, which emphasized learnable skills for counselors. Not far behind, today we are seeing an explosion of coaching, which is definitely undergirded with an educational model. Now I'm realizing that the journey model is deeply rooted in the various spiritual traditions, and Melody is quite open that her acceptance and integration training explicitly embraces spirituality. In fact, I believe the spiritual experience is a component of what she calls to be integrated. In that regard, I'm recalling Melanie sharing with us that she had a transpersonal, non-dual experience at a very early age. She was further seasoned by coming up in a Pentecostal family. Even though her religious conceptions broadened over time, I'm aware that Pentecostals strongly value personal experience of the divine via an altered state of being possessed or filled with the Holy Spirit, speaking in tongues, prophesying, and healing. So I suspect that these early experiences provided a kind of bedrock in Melanie's subsequent explorations of non-dualism. I'm very impressed by Melanie's account that after graduation from grad school, she sought advice on how she could become the best possible therapist. She was advised to seek out and apprentice herself to recognize masters in the field. She took that advice very seriously and was careful to credit a number of them in our interview. They were Corey Hammond, Ericksonian hypnosis, Bob and Mary Goulding, redecision therapy and transactional analysis, Dick Olney, self-acceptance training, Zivorad Zlavinsky, spiritual technology, and she reports another influential teacher has been Jeff Zeig of the Milton Erickson Foundation. Melanie also mentioned an episode of the popular NPR podcast, This American Life with Ira Glass. In response to my request, she sent me a link to this podcast episode. It's from 2019. I'm hoping you can find it at thisamericanlife.org/682/10-sessions. The site says, quotes, "What if someone told you about a type of therapy that could help you work through unhealed trauma in just 10 sessions? Some people knock through it in 2 weeks. Jamie Lowe tried the therapy and recorded it. In this episode, you will hear 10 sessions of an actual therapy using an approach called CPT, or Cognitive Processing Therapy, which was designed for survivors of sexual assault and is also used for veterans with PTSD symptoms." Close quote. Finally, if you're interested in finding out more about Melanie McGee, her approach, and or her workshop schedule, you can go to her website at aiit.solutions. You can also email her from there.
Hello, everyone. My name is Nicholas Toko. I've been listening to Shrink Wrap Radio for quite some time now and have really enjoyed listening to the interviews. I decided to support Shrink Wrap Radio for a number of reasons. I came across the radio podcast because I was very interested in Jungian psychology and found many of the interviews with Jungian analysts particularly helpful in explaining the concepts of Jungian psychology in both theoretical and practical terms. I'm now studying for a master's degree in Jungian and post-Jungian studies here in the UK and will go on to train as a Jungian analyst. And so listening to the podcast has become even more helpful, particularly because I don't have a clinical background, and therefore it's been, you know, really insightful to listen to and learn more about the clinical applications of therapeutic and analytical work. So thank you very much, David, for the podcast, and I hope there'll be plenty more interviews to come.
Thank you, Nicholas Toko, there in London. I'm so glad Shrink Wrap Radio has helped you on your path to becoming a Jungian analyst. I encourage others to follow your fine example as a financial donor and will choose to join you on the honor roll on our site. I recently received some very favorable emails from two new listeners, and I'm happy to share them with you. They certainly got me fired up, and I hope you'll find them similarly motivational. The first one is from Liana Stevens, who initially wrote, "Hi, how can I get access to the audio version of all the podcasts interviews that appear on the Wise Counsel podcast? The transcripts are available, but I can't seem to find a way to listen to the podcast. Towards the end of the show, number 762 on Shrink Wrap Radio, you provided some instructions to access the interview in Wise Counsel with Dr. Linehan. I was unable to access it. I would love to be able to listen to many of the interviews that were aired on that podcast. Thanks in advance, Liana Stevens, MA LPC. First of all, I'm very gratified that Liana was so motivated as to want to seek out my interview with Dr. Marcia Linehan from 2007 on my Wise Counsel series. So let me first answer that inquiry, which may be relevant to others of you out there. It's a long story, but I don't own the Wise Counsel content, and that's why it's not on my site. Fortunately, the company that owns the content still has all those interviews on their website. The easiest way to get there is to go to this URL, and I'll read it slowly, so hopefully you can capture it. Go to tinyurl.com/Z as in Z, F as in Fox, O as in Oscar, W as in Whiskey, Z as in Z or Zebra, V as in Victor, H as in hotel. I hope you got that. But you can also get there by going to shrinkwrapradio.com, selecting the About Dr. Dave tab, and you will find the link to Wise Counsel in the fifth paragraph down, along with the following information. When you click on the link, you will be taken to a long list of interview transcripts. If you want to actually listen to the interview, notice that there is a blue icon of a disc at the top left of each of the transcripts. Clicking on that blue icon will take you to the audio. Whew! Are you still with me? So I sent the above information to Liana, and she got back to me with the following. Dr. Dave, how wonderful to be able to talk with you directly. I wasn't sure if you were the one who monitors your website, /correspondence. That is why I did not address you directly in my first email to you. My apologies. And she goes on to say, thank you so much for your reply, for your help. I was just able to access the audio interviews, and I'm very excited about that, with many exclamation points after that. She goes on to say, it's a real treat to listen to your shows. They are wonderfully nourishing. My best wishes to you, Liana. And here's the other recent email I mentioned, and it's from Scotland, and it reads, hi, Dave. I'm in Edinburgh, Scotland, and about 6 months ago, I discovered your podcast. I've been making my way through the back catalog whilst putting my children to bed every night, listening whilst waiting for them to fall asleep. I am new to psychotherapy and had my first encounter with it a year ago after the death of my father. I was immediately gripped and have been reading and listening to everything I can get my hands on to learn more about the field. I've recently been accepted into university to study psychotherapy. Complete change. I'm a banker, and I can't wait to get going and qualify. I was so well prepared for the application process because I received such fantastic and wide-ranging education through listening to your podcasts. I really, really enjoy the variety, and I felt that I should write you to thank you for collating it all. I can see how much work is involved. And on a multi-year basis. It may sound rather strange, but I feel like I know you and regularly fall asleep listening to your voice. I only today actually saw your face, and of course you're not at all what I pictured. It sounds a bit creepy, but I mention it only because it's amazing the power of the internet, that here I am, a new entrant into this world of psychology and far away in London and Edinburgh. Isn't life weird? I listened to Lisa Marciano on motherhood last night, and it was incredible. I felt like I was listening to my own inner mind talking. I've enjoyed many of the podcasts, but that one was particularly great. Anyway, I really wanted to say thanks, acknowledge how much I have personally benefited as a result of your work. Best wishes. And that's from, I think it's a Scotch version of Sean. Well, it's always wonderful to hear from an enthusiastic new listener, and this feedback really feeds my inner fire to keep going. So, time once again to shrink wrap it up. Thanks again to Melanie McGee, LCSW, founder of Acceptance and Integration Training, for telling us about her work that alleviates psycho-emotional pain while contributing to spiritual well-being. Next week, my guest will be Dr. Brandy Gilmore, who will share the story of her own dramatic healing from an incurable disability and her subsequent healing work. So until then, this is Dr. Dave reminding you to be kind to yourselves and others. We'll be right back.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.